Hey everybody, this is another T-Rex Talk, wherein I get a whole bunch of random live questions from Instagram. I try to record these things on Saturday, and this was a particularly busy Saturday, hiking with some T-Rex guys who were preparing for a Go Ruck event, running a bunch of errands, doing a bunch of garden work, and actually doing a fair amount of furniture restoration for a table, which I'm actually going to be pouring some epoxy on real quickly. So, since I had to go into the shop to pick up a heat gun, to do the epoxy pour, I decided I would do a live stream on Instagram and collect questions from folks. The main reason that we stopped doing the live streams on YouTube back in the day was that YouTube placed a lot of restrictions on those live streams. Couldn't handle firearms, but also they were getting fewer and fewer and fewer views because, basically Google wasn't alerting people to the fact that we were doing the live stream. So we switched over to other forms of content. But one of the things that I missed from the YouTube live streams is the interactive two-way communication with the different people who are commenting. So, since that's something that I miss and is, I think, added quite a bit, decided to do a live stream on Instagram and record the answers to the questions for this podcast. Now, still not an entirely big fan of how that works. The problem is mostly me. I'm not great at recording two different types of media and keeping up with those kind of questions. So I'm still trying to come up with a better way of doing this. But for now, you can listen to those questions. I've pared them down a little bit, tried to make them a little bit faster so you don't hear me umming and hawing as I scroll through the little teeny tiny Instagram feed looking for good questions. So, someone had a question. We're in the back of the shop. For those of you who are listening and not watching, we're in the back of the T-Rex shop right now. We haven't done a whole lot of behind-the-scenes content recently in the shop. We need to start doing some of that because, interestingly, one of the things that T-Rex doesn't really do very well is marketing. We do organic marketing pretty well, but we don't do the hard sell marketing very much at all. And so, there's a couple reasons for that. One is we're shy. The other reason is we do most of our marketing on Instagram and YouTube. And YouTube doesn't allow us to do very much direct marketing because T-Rex-Arms.com sells items that are not on the approved cool product list. So we sell a bunch of very cool stuff, but not stuff that that Google thinks is cool. We sell things like standard capacity magazines and muzzle devices, and that's not okay apparently. So we're not really allowed to talk directly about products that we have for sale or how to get to our website to find them. But one of the things that we can talk about on YouTube, which we should do a little more of, is we can talk about how our products are made, because that's interesting, that's cool, that's stuff that people on YouTube like, that's stuff that a lot of people not only YouTube subscribers, but like YouTube head office, like, is this sort of DIY engineering content. So talking about how we make the products is totally allowed. That's a way that we could tell people about the products that we make. So we should do some more of that. Somebody asked a question because behind me you can see two CNC machines. The Haas machine over here, which is very large and accurate and expensive and powerful, and it can cut steel. It usually doesn't cut steel. This one usually cuts aluminum. And then over on my other shoulder behind me you can see the ShopBots. The ShopBots are large, but they're also very cheap and very easy to get going. So the ShopBots are how we started doing our CNC router stuff. All of our automation began with the ShopBots. They're much more accessible to get into. The price is a huge thing, but even just using them, they run on, they're just a really simple machine. Three-axis CNC router that talks directly to a Windows machine over USB. There's not much to it. It's really simple. It's really straightforward. It was a very good way for me to learn CNC stuff. But last week, we were cutting aluminum on the ShopBots and not on the Haas machine. And the reason for that is we are currently adapting the ShopBots to do more stuff. And we had these giant subplates that are like, I think they're 50 inches by 16 inches by 3/4 of an inch, I believe. And we needed to modify those. We needed to cut out some bigger holes in there because of a thing that we wanted to do. Don't get too far ahead of me here, but there was a thing that we wanted to do on those ShopBots. We needed to cut some larger holes in those subplates to accommodate some bigger stuff that was going to be on the plates that are mounted on top of the subplate. And we thought to ourselves, well, we could unbolt these things from the ShopBots, or we could take these plates that are already bolted down to a proper cutting machine and use that cutting machine to cut the stuff while it's bolted down. So we did that, and the ShopBots cut aluminum just fine. Obviously, we went slow on the Haas machines. We go super fast on the shop bots, we go slowly and cut through those plates just fine, made nice big holes for the new stuff. I think all the parts that are going onto the shop bots are coming. They're all assembled. They're almost all assembled. So next week they will be upgraded, and then, you know, all that implies. So that's the answer to that question. Do you have any experience with the small desktop CNC machines? Yes. One of our CNC machines in the back is a small desktop machine made by ShopBot. We still use it for a couple things. There's a few parts that those machines, or that one machine is set up to make, and we still make those parts on that machine because the setup is all there. Again, ShopBot is it's more of a DIY level of machine. It still is pretty robust. Like, we run these production machines and have been running them for years. And there are shops that run ShopBots for production on 3 shifts, and they're fine. So they're a little bit of step above a DIY machine in terms of how robust they are. But in terms of some of the accuracy and ways that you work with them, they're a little bit more of a DIY level machine. I think they're great. I think they're fantastic. But the Haas machines that we're running, the DT2s, they are so fast. They are so fast that, yeah, it's amazing. How do you deal with ticks after a hike? That's a good question. This morning, it's Saturday, so this morning, James and I went out and were hiking up above the range with some other T-Rex folks because a bunch of T-Rex guys are getting ready for a Go Ruck event, and so Saturday is a training day. And permethrin is a good thing to treat your clothes and shoes with. That actually helps you quite a bit. And then you just kind of keep an eye out for ticks after you come back, because there is no silver bullet, sadly. People want more in-depth information about the infrared spectrum and different filters and what they do. Again, that's kind of a hard thing to do on a podcast because that's a pretty visual thing. I suppose the best way to illustrate that is if we had a camera that had a pretty wide spectrum sensor and then we use different filters to demonstrate it, that's probably the best way to do it. But for most of the stuff that you probably want to do and I probably want to do, I just want to see as much as possible. I want to see visible light. I want to see UV light, even though there isn't much of it out there. I want to see as much IR spectrum as I can. Just, I want as many photons as possible so that I get as much light as possible. So, YouTube live videos, already talked about that. Where did the Raptor go? The Raptor has been replaced by the new sidecar. The new sidecar is very adaptable. It can be run either as a standalone holster like the Raptor was, which can be worn appendix 4 o'clock or anywhere in between, or 6 o'clock or 9 o'clock or anywhere. And then also connected to the mag carrier. So the Raptor no longer needs to exist because the sidecar is now modular and flexible enough that it can do that IWB 4 o'clock job, 3 o'clock job. It can do more. Do you see T-Rex needing to get into multi-axis machining at all? Asks someone. That is an excellent question. There are a couple of things that we do, which having 5-axis or 4-axis, actually even having an indexer with the 3-axis machines would be kind of neat. But it's not super pressing, so I don't see, there's not a real good plan for it. Occasionally, a thing comes up that we're making where that extra axis or two would be super nice. Here is the kind of thing that we generally make for T-Rex Arms production. Making a lot of our own tooling is extremely helpful for maintaining quality and consistency and being able to grow. So one of the things that the sidecar requires, the new sidecar design, is it requires that the holster be bent properly and then be clamped so that it has exactly the right shape. So making something like this that can clamp onto the holster and give it exactly the right side channel that we need is really, really important. So here's what we generally tend to do. We cut a couple of aluminum blocks, which is really relatively straightforward, and machine it in such a way that we can mount all of the linear bearings and pneumatic cylinders that are required for it to work. So I'm not saying it's easy, but it isn't something that generally requires a whole lot of really complicated 5-axis work. We're making tooling in relatively small batches, so if something like this is a half a dozen setups, it's not the end of the world. But a 5-axis machine would be cool for some other projects, so it is something that is really, really nifty. And interesting, but we're probably going to have metal 3D printers before we get to really high caliber 5-axis machines. If I had to guess, there's some very, very cool new 3D printing capability coming for different technologies for metal. So someone is asking about Control Pew's new rocket project. I think it's fascinating. I think that Wild Arms Research, Control Pew, there's a few people who are working on homemade munitions outside of just homemade AR lowers and Glock lowers. Those are very cool. T-Rex Arms love small arms, but some of the anti-armor and anti-materiel research that is being done by these DIY weaponsmiths is really fascinating. So there's not a whole lot of super complicated science behind some of the recoilless rifles that guys are making. It's not rocket science quite. It's a little bit different than rocket science. But that's something that is really fascinating to watch and potentially comes in extremely, extremely useful in various sorts of scenarios. I do think that where you get a significant benefit is not just in the launching capability, but as soon as you have the ability to create guided munitions, then your launcher, you get a whole lot of extra accuracy without having to upgrade your launcher quite a bit. So a really robust but simple launcher capability combined with guided munitions gives you a huge boost, so to speak. And that's something that, I mean, even the Russians are doing that with their tanks. They're upgrading the munitions that their smoothbore old T-72 tanks are running, and that enables them to have the accuracy of a modern tank just by upgrading the munitions and not upgrading the tank. So, kind of cool. Why do I have children? That's kind of a long question. I have children for a whole bunch of reasons. But the main reason that I have children, I would say, is because the work that I want to get done is going to take longer than one lifetime. So, yeah, we're going to need children to carry on the torch and continue doing the work. Someone asks, why are people obsessed with pinning their trigger? Well, it's because as you develop various shooting capabilities and you practice different fundamentals, different teachers teach different things, emphasize different things. Different shooters are going to get different benefits from different things, and then they're going to get really, I don't know, territorial about some of that stuff, or they're going to, because it worked for them, they're going to insist that it worked for everybody. And yeah, it turns into just an opportunity to disagree on the internet, which is kind of what the internet is for. So that's why people are obsessed with some of these shooting fundamental things. Any T-Rex Arm 3D print files in the future? So we already do have some 3D print files that exist. There are STL files and I think some Parasolid files inside of the sidecar file pack. So if you go to trxarms.com and you look at the sidecar, you can see that it is an open source design, and there's a bunch of 3D files that you can download there that will allow you to 3D print different sidecar accessories that interface with the spine system, those little hinge teeth that are there. So you can start by 3D printing those, but we have been talking about a rifle pack, and not something that allows you to build a rifle, of course, because that would be irresponsible to make an unserialized ghost gun on a 3D printer, but something that would allow you to 3D print rifle accessories really easily. So I have started modeling, just building some different meshes that would include things like sections of Picatinny rail, sections of Picatinny clamp, stuff that goes with M-lock, stuff that goes with, oh wait, no, I guess we're only supporting M-lock at this point. I guess Keymod is dead. It's 4% inferior to M-lock, so now it's 100% dead. Having a package of downloadable 3D files that lets you start to mess around and add stuff to, that would let you start to do a bunch of stuff. You could make your own hand stops, 3D print those, and just experiment with some of these different things. Grips, all sorts of stuff that is relatively easy for you to do. Like, it would be relatively simple, even if you just have Windows. That 3D file viewer or 3D paint or whatever they call it allows you to mash up meshes. So if you downloaded meshes of an M-lock mounting block and then you loaded some other meshes in there, you could make yourself your very own shape of handguard or vertical grip, which you could print out and put onto, not a pistol, of course, because it's a vertical grip, but possibly a shorter hand stop, and you could put that onto your AR-15 pistol. It's relatively straightforward, and an Ender 3 Pro is about $220 right now. An Ender 5 Pro is supposedly a lot better, but that's closer to $300. And I'm not entirely sure what all of the improvements are on it, so I'm not necessarily recommending one over the other, except that we have an Ender 3 Pro here in the shop. It works great, and it's $220. So I should probably finish that project and put together those things. I think that would be a helpful way for people to get started with some files that are interesting, not just to print out, but to tweak and change. So, for example, an Air 15 hand stop, or not a vertical foregrip, but just, you know, something that gives you a little bit extra purchase on the gun there, and is something that you can change and you can modify and print out different versions of and feel them in 3D space. I think that would be a pretty good way to start. Any chance T-Rex will make another minimalist IWB holster? The sidecar is larger than your old small holsters. It is a little bit larger, but I think it's less than a quarter of an inch for most of them. So I don't think we're planning on making anything that's a lot smaller than the sidecar. A lot of people asking questions about products that I can't talk about quite yet, so I'm going to ignore those and possibly edit these out. Does T-Rex have any plans to start producing their own production parts in-house, either additive or subtractive parts? At present, the main thing that we produce in-house are holsters. There's more than holsters that get done here. We have a sewing department that makes a lot of different stuff. It makes fewer things than you think because a lot of the stuff we have outsourced simply because volume was pretty high. They're currently being made in larger manufacturing houses that are trustworthy here in the United States. But we make all of our holsters in-house and a lot of our other Kydex parts in-house. And that's pretty much all subtractive manufacturing. After we vacuum form a piece of Kydex, we then cut it out on a CNC machine or a CNC router. So that's subtractive manufacturing. That's only step number two, though. There still is a lot of buffing and bending and cleaning and hardwiring that happens. I don't know that we're going to have additive production parts anytime soon, simply because either T-Rex Arms' volume is too high for certain manufacturing technologies, like I would say SLA printing. Our volume is a little bit too high to SLA print parts. But our volume is not quite high enough to justify having a $300,000 HP multi-jet fusion machine, which I would really love to have. So that size of production machine we're not quite big enough for, but we are just a little bit too big to 3D print stuff on the Ender 3 or some of the resin printers that we're currently using for prototypes. Best pistol brace on the market? I'm going to take this question at completely face value, as if you're talking about pistols and what are actually pistols, and I'm going to say the Flux system is a great way to put a brace on a pistol. And then there's another company that has one, Strike makes one that I haven't seen or tried that also looks pretty good for the P320, but the Flux Raider for the P320 is quite good. It's the best way to brace a pistol, in my opinion. Can you run the sidecar with only one clip? You can. The best way to run the sidecar with only one clip is when you are running it without a magazine attachment. When you're running a magazine attachment, you should really have both clips because both parts should have a clip on there. But I, for many, many years, ran a Raptor with one tuckable clip, and occasionally I will run a sidecar with only one tuckable clip instead of the one that's on the wing adapter, and it is less stable, but I don't think it makes that much of a difference, so I do it all the time. What could T-Rex Arms benefit from having FPV drone-capable media team members? Okay, first I need to check who submitted this question, see if it's somebody who is already on the media team. Perhaps somebody on the media team who already asked for a larger FPV drone budget. Okay, no, this seems to be just an average Joe type person, not a media team member. We do have an FPV drone in the media department, and I would say that one of our pilots is extremely capable, so we just need to do more with it. That's the main thing. We could benefit from it more if we just did, just use it a little bit more. How do you weigh purchase cost against added value for new tools? Excellent question. So you may know or you may not know that T-Rex tries very hard to be debt-free. So we consider buying a very expensive machine like the Haas DT2 over my shoulder right here. We need to make sure that that machine is going to pay for itself in a very short amount of time. And we need to make sure that we are adequately understanding the true cost of the machine. So there's the cost of the machine as it arrives off the truck and is delivered. Then there's the cost of the electrical wiring that has to be done to hook it up and drilling the holes into the floor so that it can be bolted down. All of the tools that need to go inside of this machine so that it can do the job that it's going to do. All the tool holders that they are going to live in. The additional cost of programming this Haas machine is much higher than the cost of programming these ShopBots. Now, it's not a whole lot higher because we're exporting ShopBot files and Haas machine G-code out of Fusion 360 now. So it's not terribly more, but switching from what I was earlier using, Aspire, to run the ShopBots over to Fusion 360 was a learning curve. So the cost of switching over to the new machine was more than just the machine. Figuring out what all those costs were going to be and then figuring out what all the time savings would be of cutting things in the Haas machine at roughly 4 times the speed. That was just a lot of math. It was an Excel spreadsheet that had a bunch of different columns and rows in it. But then there was a cost we weren't quite sure of, which was the benefit that we would have the ability to make ourselves aluminum tooling for all of our fixturing and jigs and clamps and plates. We had a rough idea of what that was worth, and so that just went in there. And we really wanted to make sure that these machines would pay for themselves quickly, not just that they would pay for themselves eventually, but we really wanted them to pay for themselves quickly in case there was a massive change, like customers going away, or the cost of metal being much higher, the cost of electricity being much higher. We wanted machines to pay for themselves over a short time as opposed to a long time. So just weighing those things together is a really important one. But another one that's appreciated is flexibility. So buying more ShopBots gets us exactly the capability that we already have because we already have ShopBots. Buying more Haas machines, when we didn't have any Haas machines, gave us the capability to not just make parts faster than ShopBots, but also to make parts out of metal that we couldn't currently make, to cut stuff out of steel. So that gives us the flexibility not just to make holster tooling, but potentially to make other stuff in the future. Potentially production parts, potentially various other types of machine parts. So here's a question. Does T-Rex Arms encourage customers to R&D holster compatibility, i.e. seeing which guns fit in y'all's holsters? So that's a good question. It's very case by case. So SIG is a perfect example of this. SIG has a gazillion guns that are from the same family and are really similar to one another. So if you contact customer support at team@trex-arms.com and you say, I have a legacy SIG P220 such and such with this modification to it, they will have a much better idea of saying to you, yeah, we're pretty sure that that gun will fit your holster. Try it out, and if it doesn't work, you can return it. As opposed to somebody who says, hey, I have a weird Ruger. Does it fit in a SIG P320 holster, and can I return it if it doesn't? The answer is going to be, no, it doesn't fit in the holster, and no, you can't. So it's very case by case. Contact customer support, and they will help you out. When it comes to certain Walthers and certain SIGs, yeah, we are interested in knowing that because it is literally impossible for us to own every iteration of SIG. Even if we were Elon Musk and we could afford them all, we couldn't find them all because they're too many and they've been scattered to the four corners of the earth. Owning all the SIG variants is a physical impossibility for a single entity. This kind of holster R&D to figure out which variants are actually supported, sometimes we do have to lean on our customers a little bit. Someone says they're heading through Tennessee on their way back up to Minnesota, asking if we have any kind of storefront. We do not. We don't have a storefront. We don't have any type of commercial way to visit. There really isn't a great way to do that. There's a couple reasons for that. One is where the shop is in an industrial park where we're not zoned for that. But the other is we're just not really well set up for that. It's the sort of thing that we'll get to. But at the moment, no, I'm afraid we have nothing like that. Someone asking about if we've looked at the Mark Forged Metal X system. It is a relatively capable 3D printer that prints in metal, but it isn't amazing in that it doesn't build you the kind of parts that some of the 3D printers currently build you. There are 3D printers on the market at a super high level of cost that can print titanium and Inconel and exotic metals, and they can print things like rocket engine nozzles, and they can print things like suppressor baffles that hold up to incredible pressure and incredible temperature. And those are really super high-end 3D printers that print metal, and they're very expensive. The Mark IV system is cheaper than that, and it prints metal that is, if my understanding is correct, comparable with machine-injected metal or die-cast-type metal. So it's going to be strong, but it's not going to be as strong as a forged or CNC-milled part. And for certain applications, that's great. And for other applications, like suppressor baffles or rocket engines, not so much. So it is something that is very capable. And for a lot of different parts, it would be great. And it's much more affordable than the system that's required for some of the parts that current listeners are thinking of. There's a question. Did you guys hire someone who knew Fusion Cam, or did you take the time to learn it yourself? Neither. I did not learn it myself, but the guys who are currently doing it did learn it from scratch. Nobody on the team had used Fusion 360 before. We had an engineer who was a solid cam guy and had used a couple of different cam packages. And then we had myself. I had been using Lightwave 3D to build meshes and Aspire to do cam. And then we had some other guys who had been making holsters for a long time and understood holsters really well, what holster molds needed to be. And that team kind of coalesced around Fusion 360, with me doing the smallest amount of work, believe it or not. And now all of those guys are pretty solid in Fusion 360 and pretty solid with the CAD stuff. Now, we're not doing super advanced cam stuff because generally we're making relatively simple tooling, or we're making holster molds, which have to be really detailed. But we're cutting them out of HDPE, which is not a super hard job, and it's a relatively simple shape, really. It's not it has to be precise, but it doesn't have to be a whole bunch of mechanical interlocking parts. It is just a shape. So using the tool paths to cut that out with a roughing pass and then smooth that out and then do some other administrative type work, some of which is secret and I can't talk about what it is, and then some of which is really obvious, like switching to an engraving bit so you engrave the actual name and date of the mold on the mold. That's actually been a huge thing. You'd think that we could just write that on a Sharpie, but it's really easy to forget to write what you have on a Sharpie and then can't remember which day you actually cut it out. Doing that stuff inside the Haas machine actually surprisingly helpful to the pipeline, especially now that the holster dev team is, I think, 6 people. So allowing all 6 of the people in holster dev to really be on the same page with which molds are which and which prototypes that come off of which molds on which days, that's kind of huge. The air traffic control of that department is the complicated part. It's actually probably the most complicated part of holster development. Here's a question. Where do you see T-Rex in 5 years' time? That's a tricky question because there's a bunch of different ways that we could grow. Obviously, we could take what we're currently doing and we could grow that, or we could add a whole bunch of stuff. There's some really obvious stuff to add. So, for example, we currently sell body armor, but we only sell rifle plates. There are other aspects of body armor that we could add to our retail offerings, and that's probably pretty easy to predict. It's just a matter of how much warehouse space do we have, how well can customer service support it, etc. Then there's completely new stuff, which some of it is relatively easy to add. I'm not even going to throw some examples out there. I'm just going to let you guys guess. Then there's some other stuff that would be relatively difficult because we currently are doing pretty low-level mechanical engineering and manufacturing. If we wanted to start doing products that were, say, electrical in nature, we would need some new skill sets and some new people and some new equipment and some new capacity. So us making electronic devices feels like a pretty giant leap compared to some of the mechanical things that we're talking about. I'm not ruling it out because some of that stuff offers the greatest benefit to our customers and would best let us tick the boxes on our strategic goals for the next 5 or 10 years. But some of the things that are on our 5-year goal list are going to be very hard to accomplish, and then others are relatively easy. So we're just going to see what it is that we can actually get done. And some of that is actually dependent on other factors. So not to tip my hand too much, but there's a project that I've been working on for a couple of years. And if it weren't for chip shortages, I'd be a lot farther along on it. Here's a question. If Tennessee nullifies suppressor prohibition similar to the Texas law, will T-Rex start manufacturing suppressors for Tennessee citizens? So technically, T-Rex could indeed do that. We have an FFL and an SOT. We're a manufacturer, so we could do that. However, there's quite a bit more legal and legislative work, I think, on that front. Technically, this has already been done on a legal sense. Technically, suppressors are already off of the Tennessee prohibited weapons list. So if you make a Tennessee suppressor in the state of Tennessee and you don't let it leave the state of Tennessee, it hasn't done any interstate travel whatsoever. It's entirely legal. Now, the ATF disagrees with that, but theoretically, inside the bounds of Tennessee law, that is the case. And also, I would say legally, the ATF only has jurisdiction in the 50 states because of the Interstate Commerce Clause. So the argument is that if an item never actually leaves the state, it never actually has participated in interstate commerce, it never actually falls under the jurisdiction of the federal government or federal law enforcement agencies. I think that that is a great legal argument. But before you make that legal argument in court, there should be a few more ducks that we have in a row. At this point, the state of Tennessee has stated that suppressors, and as of just a couple of days ago, the governor did sign our SBR bill. So SBRs are also legal in the state of Tennessee, but in this very same way, where Tennessee has made them legal, but Tennessee has not stated how they're going to keep the ATF from infringing on Tennessee law. There needs to be some more work on this front before I would recommend that anybody test this particular law. At this point, I don't see the test going well. I think that we need to get a little bit more teeth in the Tennessee law, and then it'll be time for a test. People commenting that this live stream may be suppressed. It could be. I'm talking about a lot of stuff that I'm sure triggers various Facebook and Instagram algorithms. A bunch of people asking questions about product development, some comms and radio questions. Someone asked, when's the next podcast about comms? That's a good question. The problem that I currently have is I have a few too many irons in the fire, which means that if I'm not working on comms and I'm not thinking about comms for work, well, I'm probably not thinking about them for content. So yeah, I don't have a great plan for what the next particular topic or podcast is. I have a whole bunch that are related to encryption and cryptology and stuff like that that I want to do with my brother Noah as soon as he has time, because he is the programmer and he's the subject matter expert on some of the aspects of cryptographic stuff, and particularly the crypto wars of the 80s and the 90s, something I want to get into as well. So that's kind of related to communications. It's not related to ham radio. People asking Linux questions. See, this is why I should have Noah on the podcast, because Noah is the Linux guy. I mean, he wouldn't consider himself a Linux guy, but compared to me, he's the Linux guy for sure. Actually, that's a question that I should put out to you guys. Are there specific podcast topics that you want to cover and get into a little bit more depth on? Comms is an obvious one. Someone asking when the next book podcast is. Someone here talking about the Gray Man server. Yes, everybody should join the Gray Man network and communicate on the Gray Man server. It's not a way to reach a lot of people the way that Instagram and YouTube are, but it is a great way to have private conversations. That's really important. People want a lot more thermal information, thermal and night vision information. Problem with thermal and night vision information is what most people want to know is, A, when will it be cheaper? And the answer is not anytime real soon. And then the other answer is, how do you defeat it? And the short answer is, you can't defeat it easily. So it's a really complicated thing to do. Ooh, a podcast with wild arms. Yes. I'm going to end the podcast now and end the Instagram by saying, if you are listening to the podcast, you can follow me on Instagram at Isaac Trex Arms. I think that's my Instagram handle. I don't actually remember. And then if you watch this on Instagram, you should go over to our podcast page, because there's a bunch of podcast episodes. It's been interesting watching people popping in and out of the live stream. I definitely feel like there's some Instagram shenanigans going on based on some of the comments that are in here. So thank you very much for listening to those questions. Again, I am looking for a better way of doing this, a better way of keeping in touch with our users and our customers and the people who follow us on social media or want to get in touch with us in other ways. We will eventually bring back some form of video live streaming, but we're still trying to figure out the best way to do it and find platforms that are a little bit less restrictive. That's why Lucas is streaming on Twitch. Interestingly, he was doing a Twitch stream the exact same time that I streamed this Instagram stream, but we'll always take emails through team@trex-arms.com. You can follow us on Instagram, and of course, you can comment on the YouTube videos that we post on the YouTube channel, but we do need to come up with a better way of doing interactive two-way communications, so let us know if there's a particularly good way that we're missing. can't even remember how you stop a live stream.